Welcome back, friends. We're continuing on with our reflection on the concept of safety, security, the light of Christ. And now it's time to turn our attention to the liturgy. Who is our teacher? Really without parallel. She teaches through the church teaches through the liturgy in so many ways. One of the truths that Christ reveals that the earth is both, and we see this in the liturgy, that the earth is both a spiritual battleground and that it is passing away. It is not our true home. Battle denotes an unsafe terrain with mortal dangers. Matthew 10:28, fear him that can destroy both body and soul in hell. Knowing our telos, our end, enables us to have rational, reasonable expectation. St. Peter warns of the roaring lion looking for someone to devour, 1 Peter 5:8. Paul talks about a true spiritual battle between the forces of light and darkness, and putting on the spiritual armor of God, the famous text in Ephesians 6:10-18. Our battle is spiritual. And the most effective means of countering the enemy is the sacramental life with the source and summit being the Eucharist. The liturgy can help us understand the role of holiness as opposed to safety for the Christian life. I think can...
Yes.
Interact with that.
So when we think about safety again, and the as it respects or as it relates to the liturgy, we can see a safe haven there, in the sense that it is protecting us from worldly cares. Just as an anecdote, yesterday I was with the six men that I've had mass with every Tuesday, and they're from all walks of life, and there is a prominent lawyer who is a great lawyer in the city, who was there, he'll remain unnamed, but he started coming to the Latin Mass fairly recently. And he told me that he had been talking with his wife recently about how much an effect the Latin Mass is having on him and how it's really deepening and making more profound his faith. Now this is not an accident. And it's not the first time I've heard it, but it was so beautiful to hear someone who's really only been to about 7 or 8 traditional masses, who is really now having a whole world opened up to him, and the fact that he feels as if he has a refuge in the mass that he never realized before with the what they call the ordinary or the Novus Ordo liturgy.
That is right. That is right. It is. And I mean, the readers here, if my friends are coming to a site with a Latin name, I presume they've heard the term, the bark of Peter. And that bark is the church. And the church is within her bosom is one of safety. At least within the Novus Ordo, the readings are Matthew with the parables. And how Jesus teaches the parables to the crowds. You know, after the persecution, Jesus starts using parables as his form of conveyance. But he goes into the house, into the church, to explain the meaning of his parables, or I use the word secret, but it's not secret as in sort of magic, but it's just... You're within the nurturance of a mother. You know how a mother cares her children, and she, you know, she's telling them things. But it's to the child, mother to child, as opposed to perhaps a large, impersonal audience. So maybe that's sort of a definition of secrecy, perhaps. But that notion that within the church is really where we will be kept. We'll have custody. That's where our custody is. And so whatever rails in the storm, you know, back to the boat on the water with Christ and, of course, Our Lady, that's really where we're going to find that that the attorney was, his soul was recognizing.
Sure. So when you talk about that concept of the secret, we have the secret prayer in the traditional Mass, and that's not so that nobody knows what it is. It is to speak to the those who are baptized into the faith. The catechumens don't have a right to hear that because they probably won't understand it, first of all. Second of all, they've not received the grace to have that mystery unfolded to them yet. So that is a secret in the sense that it is a common bond of the baptized faithful. The first thing you said early on, I almost fell over because the minute you started talking, I thought about the bark of Peter, but the dream of St. Don Bosco, where the bark of Peter is entering the harbor. On the left is Holy Communion. It is the Blessed Sacrament. And on the right is the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Okay.
So the ship is coming in between the two essential parts of the church, coming into the harbor, coming into the safe haven from all of the danger out on the ocean. So this bark of Peter is very much something we have to hone in on. And when I was in San Antonio with Father Phillips, he had a mesh constructed over his church because that was supposed to catch the fish that were there in the bark of Peter, in the nave of the church. And there was no mesh in the sanctuary because you don't need to catch the fish there. They're already there. It's a beautiful, beautiful concept.
It is a beautiful concept. It absolutely is. Holiness, virtue gives both the beatific vision. That's what allows the soul the access to the beatific vision is holiness and virtue. And additionally, they are our best hope for having a life of happiness here. You know, and if you will, the best hope we have of having safety. Because if you have a society focused in on the Ten Commandments, and we're focusing in on the natural law, and we're focusing in on doing to those that which you'd have you do to me, then you need very few laws, and people go out of their way, if you will, to be helpful. And it seems to my mind we are far, far from that ideal. And why do I say that? Because I see such a proliferation of law and ordinance. You know, the face mask to me is one such current example of it. But playground equipment or car equipment or so many regulations in life, trying to get to a type of safety apart from the only thing that matters, which is Jesus Christ.
Yeah, let's also tap into that idea of rescuing, of being proactive to head off a danger. So often we're assaulted as Catholics by the Crusades. The Crusades were not immoral. In fact, the Muslims had stolen land of converts, people who had converted the Catholic Church, and they had stolen those lands. The Crusaders went back to reclaim that land, to reclaim that progeny, to protect, to be there and to serve those Christians. And now in many of those countries, the Christian population has largely been wiped out. It's been expunged from the face of the earth. Millions of Coptics, for example. They estimate that over 40 million Coptics are no more because of this Muslim influx and them taking land that does not belong to them. We did not conquer that as Christians. Those lands were given to us by and large. Some of them were conquered, but the vast majority were given to us by converts, people who came into the church. So when we go to rescue and to aid and abet our fellow Catholics, this is acting on behalf of Christ himself, because he doesn't want us scattered along the way. He doesn't want us killed as sheep for the slaughter. He wants us to thrive, to multiply, and to come back to him.
He sure does. when he says, you know, I've come to give life and to give it to the full, the Greek word sozus, he really does mean that. And it's, I know it's very easy to start going down the rabbit hole of the prosperity gospel. I know that. And you know that I don't think that's what the Lord's saying, but he did give excellent wine at Cana. When he heals someone, it's not chintzy healing, right? It can be odd how he chooses some of his healings can be odd, but one can't call them thin. And I recently came across a quote from Chesterton that says, you know, a miracle is a man with two legs, you know, the super abundance that the Lord gives to each one of us, just that you and I have two legs that function and take us where we want to go, is a profound miracle. And I mean, we could just sit here and just have a reflection on all the tremendous miracles, big and small, the Lord continuously does give us. He does love us, and he wants us to have this tremendous relationship with him. But it's an honest one, right? It's got to be based on truth. It can't be based on subjective norms.
Exactly. So when we're thinking about the concept of bringing ourselves to salvation or to the doorstep of salvation, we have to remember that it's not automatic, that we are not objectively saved in a moment in time. It is outside of time. So we have to use the past, present, and future. I was saved when I was baptized. I will be saved. I am being saved by the sacraments, and I will be saved if I stay true to the end. And that really is the crux of the issue. Will we be with God until the end? And will he be able to justify saving us into his bosom? We want to give him every opportunity to give us another chance. We don't want to give him any reason to give his full justice and then condemn us to hell.
That is right. All right, my friends, we have at least one more episode, and it's going to be a practicum. What can we practically do in this life that we live in? So that till the next time, my friends, fides et ratio.